Thanks for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you coast to coast and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. And if you're watching on our twitch.tv webcams there, you see I have a guest in studio, and it is the veteran Hollywood movie maker Alex Cox. He has a new movie he has written and directed entitled Dead Souls. It'll be the closing feature tonight at the Roxy, all part of the San Francisco Indie Fest. Alex, welcome to the studio. Now,
Thank you. People say...
Did you say or someone else say this is your last film? That sounds foreboding.
Well, it's a bit like the Who's farewell tour, you know. I can have a few last films maybe, but we'll see. But I'm an old guy, you know. Maybe it will be.
Now, you originally from Blighty, as we say.
I spent a lot of time over there. And, Perfidious Albion.
Perfidious Albion. I always loved that line, yeah. So my ancestors in the 1770s came over from Brighton. And I know that you spent some time there, right?
Bristol. I was in Bristol for a year. I was going to film school. And it rained every day. And I have a friend I hadn't seen in many, many years who went to live in Bristol. I saw him last year. And I said, is it still pouring with rain? And he goes, oh, no, it doesn't rain anymore.
Wow. So where did you grow up, your younger years?
I grew up outside Liverpool.
Okay. So you're Scouse.
To the north. So I'm a, what they call a cardboard Scouse. Because I wasn't actually from the city itself. I was from across the water.
Were you from, or were you Everton or Liverpool?
I actually supported Tranmere Rovers.
Tranmere Rovers,
that
yeah.
was our local.
The Wirral.
Local guy. Yeah. On the Wirral, exactly, yes. The Wirral.
Very good. I'm Spurs, as you might see, Tottenham through and through. But I have to mention that when I was in college, there were two movies that were huge in the United States, and I saw both of them. First was Repo Man, and then Sid and Nancy.
Oh, yeah. And, I saw them, too.
And we can get into those. We don't have time to get into all because we want to talk about your new film. But to work with Gary Oldman at the time, playing Sid Vicious, did you realize that... I mean, did you think this guy is going to have a 50-year career? He's going to get suited and booted and go to Buckingham Palace someday? Like, he's that talented.
Well, I think he wanted that. I don't know. I didn't know him well enough. I just, for me, he was just an actor that I'd seen in a stage play. Mm-hmm. And he hadn't done any films at that point.
You gave him a big break?
I guess so. That was his first feature. Mm-hmm. And so I just always think of people as actors, you know. And if they're a good actor, then it's a pleasure to work with them.
Mm-hmm. So to write and direct Repo Man, which was such a interesting movie, there hadn't been anything like it at the time. And Harry Dean Stanton, Emilio Estevez, what was that like when you... Did you have these guys in mind, or did you go through a long audition process?
No, I was going to do it originally. I was going to do it with Dennis Hopper and Dick Rude.
Oh, wow.
And and I had a very nice lunch with Dennis, and he was very nice, but his agent wanted a bit more money than was in the budget.
Wow.
And then my wife, I knew Harry Dean already because I tried to get him to be in a student film when I was at UCLA. Mm-hmm. But my wife ran into him, met him at a party. She wasn't my wife then. She was in another relationship. But she mm-hmm. called me and said, you have to get back in touch with this guy, Harry Dean Stanton, because he has that Old West skeleton-y thing, which will be perfect for your film. And he did, and he was, and he was perfect.
I love that Old West skeleton-y.
The Old West skeleton-y thing.
And just to finish up on, you've done a lot of films, but and then Straight to Hell, and how cool to have Joe Strummer from The Clash in that.
Yes. Oh, and I worked with Joe for 3 years pretty solidly, because right when they finished The Clash, right after they came back from the busking tour, mm-hmm. was when Joe and I met. And I said, maybe you'd like to see this film when we finish shooting it, you know. He said, oh yeah, I'll come and look at it, you know. And he ended up writing, even though officially he's only credited with 2 songs in Sid and Nancy, but he actually wrote 6.
Wow.
That are on the soundtrack.
Wow.
Under pseudonyms. And then we did Straight to Hell, in which he wrote music and acted. And then we did Walker in Nicaragua, in which he had a small acting role and wrote the score, which I don't know if you've ever heard his score for Walker. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Now, you had kind of an affinity or maybe a fascination with the Sandinistas, is that right?
Well, no, I'd just gone down there because I thought it was interesting that this was in Carter times, that initially, the media were very positive about the Sandinistas because they'd overthrown a cruel dictator, you know. Mm-hmm. And some of them wore Panama hats, you know. They were totally cool. And then, this was the weird thing, within a matter of weeks, the media kind of turned. And all of a sudden, it wasn't Somoza that was the problem. It wasn't the dictator that they got rid of. It was the Sandinistas that were the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was so interesting that the media could actually reverse their position mm-hmm. in unison.
Kind of like the Mujahideen. They were our friends.
They were our friends until they were our enemies. And they were also invented in the Carter regime by Brzezinski. That Brzezinski guy caused us a lot of problems.
Yeah, Zbigniew Brzezinski.
Zbigniew,
he was
yeah.
the guy who said, well, let the Shah come to New York for medicine. It's
That's
no big
what
deal.
He said, oh, yeah. And Carter said, and then they will attack the embassy and take our diplomats mm-hmm. hostage.
Mm-hmm.
And Zbigniew said, no, they won't.
He's an old friend. You can't have him getting medicine in Panama.
But anyway, it's the Sandinista film that we did was called Walker, and it was Joe Strummer's. The first thing he did that was a total solo movie score. And it's incredible. It's really worth, if it can be found, it's really worth finding.
You, by the way, just meeting you in person, you have a marvelous cadence about, I mean, to do, I don't know, books on tape or something, as they say.
Why, thank you.
Please hold for Dr. Johnson. Have you been? I'm sure you've been told that before, though.
I did. I actually, the guy who cuts my hair, I did his phone message for him. But
is that
it's
right?
The only one I've done the flat top. Yeah, you've reached the flat top.
Now,
Mike Torres is not available right now.
So, I'm interested too. Is that at a young age, as you mentioned, UCLA, and coming over here? The kind of thing that's like, yeah, I can make movies in London, but to go really big time, you know, you got to go to Hollywood, I guess.
No, it wasn't like that.
What was it?
No, there was very little in the way of film education in England in the 1970s. There was the course that I went on, which was at Bristol, which was a one-year course.
Mm-hmm.
And then the only other two film schools at that time were in London. I didn't like London. Mm-hmm. Didn't want to go to London, you know.
What was it about London?
Well, I'm from Liverpool.
You don't like those Southerners.
No.
Fancy dance.
If you go into London, people in Liverpool literally say, I'm going down to England today. You know, I'm coming back tonight. But anyway.
Where did you stay in London when you went? Like, did you live there for a while? Or?
I lived there when we were making Sid and Nancy.
Uh-huh.
And I had a place in Bermondsey.
Oh, yeah, just south of Thames.
Yeah, which is where Gary Oldman came from.
Okay.
Which is a working class neighborhood, very depressed. Mm. I'd found though kind of an artist.
Very posh now.
Now it's all gentrifying.
Yeah.
But when Gary lived there, it was very poor, and it still was poor, largely poor when I was there. So I understood then where he was coming from and why he wanted to get out of Bermondsey, you know.
Sort of not too far from the Battersea power station and... I noticed, like, when I went south of Thames towards Greenwich, I went through a lovely town called Mudchute.
Mudchute, that's right.
It's a great name for a place.
Well, you know the Tower Bridge and the Tower of London,
mm-hmm.
and then on the opposite side of the Tower Bridge is Bermondsey.
Right, the Shard, no, really, it's quite near there.
Oh, that came after my time.
I've not been up the Shard, but I've seen the Shard, yeah. That used to be the Gherkin, or Canary Wharf in the East End. Like, those would be the new...
That became very large in the Thatcher.
The new places, yes.
Yeah.
So for you, when you write and direct, and Walker was a film that you directed, but you didn't write, did you find that in any ways handcuffed or stifling that you couldn't, or did you think that it was maybe more freedom, that you didn't have to worry about the script?
No, it was better because I had a collaborator, you know, because mm-hmm. Rudy Wurlitzer wrote the script of Walker. And I'm one of those directors who loves to have the writer come to the set, you know. And so I was constantly, oh, Rudy, you've got to come back down to Nicaragua. All the actors are asking for you, you know. And they were, because there were a ton of actors and they all wanted to talk about their character.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very fortunate that Rudy was the screenwriter.
That's great. And so when you think about, we just have a minute to break. Can you stay another segment?
Yes.
Because I'm chatting about other things about your film, and I want to make sure we promote Dead Souls at SF Indie Fest.
Yes.
To check it out.
Tonight.
Tonight. And by the way, just when you go to these premieres, are you still asked to sign maybe some weird paraphernalia or memorabilia or such things?
Yeah, people have brought their Repo Man DVD.
Yeah.
That's or the Repo Man VHS.
Isn't that interesting how that film still resonates?
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, who would have thought that?
I just remember the one line I remember is when Harry Dean drives up and he says something like, "Hey, you want to make some money?" And it's like, "Blank you, blank."
Yeah. Oh, we had really, I mean, you couldn't make Repo Man now because the stuff we said about John Wayne, you couldn't say that in the film now.
Right. That was it. And it's too bad, really, when you think about it. All right, what we'll do is we'll take a quick break and we'll come back. And we're very happy to have in studio with us Alex Cox. He has written and directed a new film called Dead Souls, which will be tonight at the Roxy. Did we get a time when that is at the Roxy?
8:30.
8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We'll take a quick break and we'll come on back on Sports Byline. Thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you coast to coast, around the world on American Forces Network, 177 countries, and you can see on twitch.tv and streaming on YouTube, Alex Cox, writer-director in studio of the new film Dead Souls, which will be the closing film, they always say the best for last, at festivals, is sfindiefest.org, at the Roxy Theater here in San Francisco. And Alex and I were just speaking during the break, and I was wondering if you still live in the UK or LA, and you're in Southern Oregon, very rural. And not only that, you are a volunteer fireman.
I am a volunteer firefighter. We're all pretty old now. I'm a volunteer firefighter, 71 years old. So I'm not going to be the one that climbs on the roof and saves Granny. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because we were talking about Oregon, and it is, you know, people think of Oregon and Idaho and stuff as very rednecks and very right wing and stuff, which is, to a certain extent, is true, you know. But when there's a fire, when the fire department shows up, nobody asks you your politics.
Right.
Nobody says, oh, I'm not having any right.
Did you vote for Hillary? Otherwise, let my house burn.
No liberals on my property. Nobody says that when you come to fight the fire, you know. So that's been a very, very valuable lesson to me.
Or as you would say, the fire brigade.
Oh, the fire brigade.
I always like brigade a little bit better. So to me.
That was a song, right? Manfred Mann, was it? The fire brigade.
I only remember Blinded by the Light. Yes, the Earth Band. Yes.
Anyway, sorry.
Yes. I'm surprised that you don't have a little bit more of a Scouse accent, or did you have to get rid of that?
No, I used to talk like this all the time, but they can't understand you if you talk like this.
There it is.
When it comes to America, you have to moderate things a bit, you know.
There it is.
All Unless right. you're Ringo. If you're Ringo, you don't need to.
If you're Ringo.
You stay the way you always were.
So, when this is going to sound a bit trite, but I'll ask it anyway. Do the Beatles mean more to you because you're from the same area?
Absolutely.
Okay.
My favorite band. Well, after The Clash.
Okay.
Clash, my favorite band. Beatles, second.
Yeah,
definitely.
I once, I'm a karaoke nerd, and there sometimes they'll do live band, and it was Clash live band karaoke. And so you'd get there early, and you'd sign up, and it was one person per song, and I was very happy that Spanish Bombs was available.
I'm flying in on a DC-10 tonight.
DC-10 tonight. That was so fun to sing that with the chords, you know, wow, and be on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a thrill. That sounds like something you might enjoy.
Well, I'm seeing a guy this afternoon. I'm going to go to MoMA with a guy who used to be great friends with Joe Strummer, Rudy Fernandez, who was a big pal of The Clash, and he's still around.
Yeah. How do you find our fair city when you come up?
A lot of money here, huh? You look at those cars. And we're in downtown, admittedly, but look at those cars, man. There's not a used car in sight.
You have to go a little bit in the other directions, maybe just a tad, yeah. So for you, why was it, not the Cotswolds or the Valley, but Oregon? What spoke to you? Was it the kind of being quasi off-grid?
No, my wife lived there.
Oh, okay.
So I had to go and live in Oregon too.
Fair enough. There it is. All right, let's talk about Dead Souls. Here's the blurb. The mysterious Strindler appears in a small Arizona desert town. It is 1890 and the year of the census, and he's paying money for the names of dead Mexicans, and no one knows why. Tell us more, Alex.
Ah, well, you have to see the film to find out why.
That's it.
But the story is the story of a book called Dead Souls by Gogol, in which the protagonist's name is Chichikov. And he's going around what was then Russia, rural Russia, although now it's part of Ukraine. And he's buying the names of dead serfs from landowners. And nobody knows why. he's amassing a big list of the names and addresses of dead serfs. You know, why? Mm-hmm. And that, and all of that was happening around about the turn of the American Civil War, because I think the Tsar liberated the serfs the year the American Civil War began. And it took Lincoln, what, 3 or 4 more years to issue the Emancipation Proclamation. So mm-hmm. it's interesting, the synchronicity of that, that both mm-hmm. these liberations were happening in a very, very short space of time.
So could you tell us about the cast, please?
Oh, well, the cast contains a number of actors from Arizona. Mm-hmm. It contains some people I've worked with before, like Xander Schloss and Dick Rude.
Mm-hmm. You finally got Dick Rude.
Got Dick back again. Dick hadn't acted for 12 years.
Wow.
Dick became a director. He made a film called Quit about trying to give up smoking and vices, which mm-hmm. is actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. But he's been working in construction. He has a construction business in L.A., and so I persuaded him to come back. Mm-hmm. So Xander's in it, Dick's in it. Edward mm-hmm. Tudipole, I should say, very fine actor, is also in it. And Del Zamora, who is also in Repo Man and pretty much everything else I've done.
Wow. So you have, like a lot of people, you have guys and gals that you trust, kind of like Scorsese or whomever. Like, you have, like, I know that they're going to deliver. They're not going to rock the boat, and they'll, and I guess
they can, but sometimes they do rock the boat. But in a collaborative, used to you, and they're much more troublesome.
Way.
They're much more troublesome than people you don't know.
And the Xander Schloss from The Circle Jerks,
for example.
That's the Xander Schloss.
Yes.
I'm talking about? Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And he can act.
Oh, he's a good actor. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's a good actor. And he's very good in this, actually. He really he plays a great character.
So when you think about the collaborative effort of having people that you've been with for a long time, how much of it at this point as your evolution of a director is like, you know, I shouldn't stand here, my character would never say that, and you just say, look, can we just shoot this and go home? Or do you like, no, tell me more?
No, I tell them, right, okay. I don't care where they stand.
Okay.
If they want to sit on top of the refrigerator, I mean, they presumably have a reason to want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I would give the actors a lot of leeway, because I figure if you're the director, you have to deal with all the characters in the script, and you have to deal with all the crew people, and you have to decide where the cars are going to be parked the following mm-hmm. morning. So there's lots mm-hmm. of work for a director to do, and if the actor is inspired, much better to let them run with it, because they know their character. Everybody else, you know.
Even if you wrote it, they know the character.
They know the character better than I do. They've thought about that more, because I've written a piece that has 20, 25 characters, but Xander only knows his character.
Mm.
And he showed up on set having designed and built his own costume.
Wow.
So he showed up in a kind of buckskin outfit with a dead coyote wrapped around his neck. I mean, yeah, he just came with his own costume.
Well, that's like, I always like hearing afterwards, like, you know, like Tarantino arguing with Michael Madsen, like, take off that effing hat. And he goes like, no, I'm going to leave it on. I go, okay, well, then I'm going to write a line where we make fun of you wearing it. Like, is that the kind of fun that you can have as you're making a movie?
Well, I think, you know, it's a different world, isn't it? Because I think on a Tarantino film or a Hollywood film, they have weeks and weeks to shoot, you know,
okay.
So they can start fooling around like that. But I'm very disciplined, you know. I mean, I shot this film in 15 days.
Wow.
So there isn't a lot of time for messing about,
wow.
You know.
90 minutes?
Yeah, 87.
It's just perfect.
Like a regular feature, but I mean, but we rampaged through. We shot 5 or 6 pages a day.
Well, everything's 3 hours now. Thank you for making a normal movie.
Oh God, isn't it terrible?
Well, and it's less runs in the theater too per day.
It's really crazy. I mean, I saw that Scorsese movie, you know, about the murder of the Native American.
Oh my gosh!
People.
Oh my gosh!
And there was a good hour and a half movie in there.
There was. I couldn't agree with you more. And I was like, we didn't need that scene. We didn't need that scene. And I don't know why, but it's a self-indulgent thing now where it's weird where the studios are like, whatever you say, I'm going to need 250 on this. Okay, whatever you want. And then you get half the money too, because you only get half the run.
And it's interesting, isn't it? But I think that the theatrical life isn't so important to them anymore. The theatrical life is a thing that happens before the streaming.
Yeah. Mm. So that's the other thing, too, is like you come from back in the day where we're getting getting our hands dirty, splicing film together, trying to get dailies, and then now everything comes through the clear blue sky right to our phones. What's that like to see that transition?
Well, in terms of editing, it's fantastic because in terms of editing, it means that, you know, the director can be in one place, the editor can be somewhere else, the special effects team can be somewhere else. So I was in Oregon, Merritt, the editor, was in Brasilia, and the special effects, the visual effects team were in Berkeley.
Wow.
But the corollary of that is that what would take you 10 minutes to resolve if you were all in the same room can go back and forth for weeks because you're not all in the same room. You know? So there was something to be said for that old-fashioned style of editing where you meet around the moviola, you know,
right.
The director, the editor, the special effects guy, you look at the thing, you go, oh, okay, I got it, done, you know. Whereas if you're all separate, it's harder sometimes to stay on the same page.
Just to quote Scorsese, and I don't know if he came up with it, but I heard him say that, you know, movies aren't finished, they're abandoned. For all the films that you've done, are you like, lickety-split, exactly the way I want it, or I can't take it anymore, print it, and let's move on to the next
one? Neither, and I don't understand what he said. I don't understand that comment, because it just seems to me that that's a laziness.
Mm.
You know, of course the thing is finished at a certain point, unless you don't want it to finish, you know, like an academic or a politician. You're just going to drag it on forever, you know, fighting for healthcare, you know. But really, you want to finish the project. You know, you want to shoot it, you want to edit
That's
it.
That's the arc.
Do all the stuff and get it finished. And there's nothing nicer than to get to the end and to be able to say, wow, we've signed off. It's finished. It's done. You know, so I feel differently about that. I don't think that everything has an end.
All right.
Everything has an end, and that should be celebrated.
All right. So, everybody, sfindiefest.com for your tickets. Dead Souls. This is from our guest, Alex Cox, and it is coming out tonight at 8:30 at the Roxy Theater. Make sure to see it, and if you can't get there, coming, I'm sure, to streaming services and theaters.
Well, actually, with a bit of luck, we have distribution with a very good company called Kino Lorber.
Oh.
So it will have a proper U.S. distribution, both theatrically,
great,
and then on discs, and then streaming.
Alex, it was my distinct pleasure having you in. Cheers, mate.
Thank you.